One of the most polarizing things you can call someone with a disability is inspirational. People either love it or hate it. My name is Nate. I'm a wheelchair user, and I call my show We're the Inspiration, featuring real stories about people with disabilities and some of the people closest to them. These stories are not designed to inspire, just to entertain. Recently, for the first time, I was on someone else's podcast, and now this person has his turn to be on mine. Alan Johnson, thank you for being the inspiration for this episode.
Hey, Nate. Happy to be on here.
What's going on, man?
It's a pleasure. I'm glad you had me on. You're actually the first person I've ever been a guest on.
I think I told you the same thing about your show.
Yeah, you did a great job on my show. Hope I can return the favor.
Well, we'll see about that, man. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We've been talking about it for a while, but unfortunately, you were in the hospital for a little while.
Yeah, if anybody knows anything about being a quadriplegic, UTIs are very common, especially if you cath yourself, like intermediate cath. I got one that was resistant to every antibiotic out there. Can you believe that?
Oof.
So I was in the hospital 10 days getting IVs. Now I feel like it's coming back again. So who knows what's going to happen next. I just thank my blessings. Thank God I'm still alive.
You know, it's an ugly subject, folks, but it's one that disabled people have to go through sometimes, you know, medical attention and all kinds of stuff like that. You mentioned being a quadriplegic. And as I understand it, that's from you being in a car accident.
You're right. I became disabled or injured July 4th, 1987. So I had a car wreck, flipped it, and came back over on my top, and I guess it snapped my neck. I remember a few things. I can remember hearing the wheels still spinning. There was an alarm going off, like a seatbelt alarm, and I remember my dad disabled on that. So I don't know what I heard, but I swear I heard that. And first thing I can remember when I rode the car was, oh my God, what am I going to tell my dad? I could tell maybe a dog or a fox ran out in the road and I swore to miss it. I was drunk driving, so that didn't help any situation. And there was so many what ifs that night. I was supposed to stay at a friend's house. It was his birthday party that we went out for. Went in there to pass out in his room, but his brother locked the door and would not open the door. So I decided to drive home, and I was almost home. We lived on a farm, so we had like a half mile gravel dirt lane. And I was going down that, and a car was coming from my house, pulled up into the field to exit. And we had some gas stolen out there recently. I'm thinking, oh, this person's stealing the gas. So I took off after him, but I was so drunk. My decision-making was impaired. I didn't realize that his dad owned some property back there. He was back there parking, making out. But I was so drunk, I didn't think of that. I was following him that he turned down a gravel road. If you know anything about gravel roads, it's very dusty. It's hard to see in front of you. And this was around midnight, 1 o'clock. But I can remember being so close at night and going down the gravel road, I could see his license plate. So he went around the curve. I didn't. Went straight. And I actually got pictures of it. You can see my tire marks.
This is not meant to be a PSA, but this is what can happen if you drive drunk, folks.
I agree. I've given many presentations on it.
So you've done speeches at schools and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. I've given speeches with DARE going around through schools. It's mostly high schools. Schools that kind of got away from presentations. Right. Now they do the reenactment kind of. A car flipped over or something and people act dead, blood all over them. I mean, fake blood. Like, what would you do in that situation? There's pros and cons with that, but I'll digress on that.
Well, you know, I used to give speeches about my disability as well. And I know that they've sort of gotten away from that, but I feel like that's more effective just because you can know exactly what happened as opposed right. to, you know, watching some dramatization of it.
Mm-hmm.
What might have happened, right?
When I lived in Iowa, I teamed up with a not-for-profit, I can't remember the organization, but I mean, this other kid, he was a paraplegic, and I was a quad. We would do different demonstrations. One of them was we put people in wheelchairs, like, for half a day. You can only stand up, of course, for a bathroom. And that was it. You had to do everything by the wheelchair. And a lot of the kids, it made an effect on, but I'm greedy. When people say, if I can affect one person, forget that. I'm greedy. I want to affect them all.
It can be powerful stuff to have that effect on people.
And it has to be, because I was told many times, don't drink and drive. Don't drink and drive. If you do drink and drive, find some place to stay, which I did. It's unfortunate, but I have only myself to blame.
So you were obviously old enough to drive when this happened to you. But
yeah, I was 16.
So tell me some of the things that you had to relearn how to do once you were a quadriplegic.
Oh, wow, man. Often the first thing I say to, and I'll keep this clean. I don't want to say no cuss words on here.
Yeah, I appreciate that, but go ahead.
Often one of the things I say to high school students is, here I was, you know, a ladies man, which I thought I was, at least in my own mind. Actually, the night of my wreck, I had two dates. Going from a ladies man, then waking up some cute little blonde wiping your behind. That'll make you humble real quick. My first M accident, I could not move my arms. Arms came slowly back. Then the coordination was really bad. I'd go touch my nose and I would touch my ear. I had to relearn how to set up. Now, I can remember the first time I set up, 3-4 weeks afterwards, it felt like just the trunk of my body, my waist sitting on the bed. I burst out in tears. I cried. It scared me so bad. I had to relearn how to eat because my hands didn't work, and coordination. I had to relearn how to dress, relearn how to go to the bathroom. I had to relearn how to take care of myself in the wheelchair. Then when I got out, I had to relearn how to drive because now I'm driving with hand controls. And that took a little bit of getting used to. My poor brother-in-law, if he was Catholic, he probably would have said 250 Hail Marys.
Now, I was going to bring that up a little bit later because I sort of found out you are a religious guy through the fact that you had me edit some audio of you basically talking religion. But did developing a disability ever conflict with your faith? Because I know that happens to some people.
No, it was my faith that got me through it. My dad actually was paralyzed at one time. Same type of injury as me, same level, everything. He slowly went paralyzed. He fell from a grain bin, but he started walking, but he always walked with the limp. So he knew what I was going through. So he was, my mom was my heart and soul, but he was my rock. That made me and my dad closer. But my dad was a John Wayne type. You know, he don't say, yeah, I love you. You just do it. Him telling you I love you was later on in life. Sometimes you question your faith, of course. When my dad died, I want to know if he went to heaven. So I read the Bible and I researched the Bible. And that just brought me closer. But no, I never doubted once that there was a God or anything. But I wasn't as close to Christianity as I am now.
You say the same thing happened to your father that happened to you. Was it just that he was not injured to the extent that you were, or he somehow recovered from it easier?
He got injured in 68. And he fell from a grain bin inside. He had to go up and see if the corn was not going to the auger. And so he stepped on it and it wasn't froze. It went through and he fell about 10 feet and grabbed a little ladder. When he grabbed a little ladder, it twisted him and hurt his neck. He went home, felt fine, you know, of course his neck hurt. But he woke up like three nights later in the middle of the night. And he told me that it was so bad, the pain. He wanted to tell my mom, get a hammer, just knock him out, you know, just end it. Because, wow.
He was never paralyzed.
No, he was paralyzed. C5, C6. I think I hurt my spine worse from the swelling than he did. They did have to put a fusion in his neck. But I don't think he hurt his spine as worse as I did.
Now, one of the cool things that you told me about was when you were checking out my show, you told me that one of the things we have in common is sort of a past in radio. Tell me about yours.
I lived down in Florida for 5-6 years. And the reason I moved down there is because I knew somebody down there on the radio station. And she's like, come on down. You can stay with us and I'll get you a job. So I went down there. Oh, God, I love Florida. I miss it. Big time. And Fort Myers, Naples, which I covered on the radio station. It was a major country station. There's two of them down there, and I was on one of the major ones. I started off just doing Sundays, playing like NASCAR country. More showed up, more I learned. I started doing weekends, night, and boy, I could tell you, the things I've heard people call up and request and invite me to parties, women, it was all crazy. That's, now, you got to figure the weekends, all the drunks are out, and they're listening either at home or in their cars. Hopefully not drinking driving, but they got the country blasting. You get those and rednecks going, you know, it's Florida, boy. I'm a redneck, so they could tell that by my voice when they called me up. It was a blast. It was interesting. I came a DJ down there when Garth Brooks' Long Neck Bottle came out. So that was cool playing his songs when he was popular.
Now, you got your own podcast, which I will link in the description when I put this up, but correct me if I'm wrong, it's mostly about your own life.
Yeah, I have a podcast called Disability Talk. The first three episodes in season one, definitely listen to episode one. I talk about, and it's not edited, it's very raw, about my accident, how I dealt with it, what I had to redo, learn to do, everything. And then I got sick. My mom was going through Alzheimer's. She died. So I only did like three episodes, and they were sporadic. So now I started to revamp it, season two. I got guests on there, different types of disabilities. And of course, you're number one.
You're number one guest.
So you're number one guest. So if they want to hear more about you, they can tune in.
Yeah, there are probably a few things that I haven't talked about on my show that are on yours now, because there's nothing wrong with drawing from your own experience, but I try to sort of focus on other people when I do my show. And I guess you're starting to do that too when you're bringing in guests and stuff like that. But
yeah, season two is a different format. You can still bring in guests and draw upon your own experience.
Sure.
But it's interesting knowing about different disabilities that you never knew existed or didn't know was a disability. It's very interesting and educational and fun.
I think there is a difference there between people like you who sort of fall into a disability, no pun intended, but I was born with mine. So I think maybe there's an easier learning curve for people who are born with theirs as far as what other disabilities actually are.
Right. Yeah, the hidden disabilities. I'm going to have a few guests on that have hidden disabilities.
Yeah, I've done that too. That's a good idea.
I have a service dog, and I want to get somebody on there with the service dog to talk about how good they are and how helpful they are. What it means to be certification, not just something they call certification.
I've never had a guest with a service dog on yet, or a service animal. I haven't had one. I haven't really needed one, but you know,
the race is on. I got to beat you.
Well, you can talk about that a little bit yourself here, man.
Yeah, you're right there. 4 years ago, I got a dog, a black lab. Her name is Kaya, K-I-Y-A, and means Hawaiian princess. She's too smart for her own good. But when I applied for it, I had to go through a bunch of different interviews. The interviews were more robust than any interview I ever had in my life. I went there and talked to a few people and just trying to match me with the dog. I was like, I feel like you're setting me up on a double date. And they're like, well, we kind of are. But when I got selected, it was just a matter of finding the right dog for me. Then after I got selected, it was in Ohio. And I live in Illinois. It was a 3-week training course where you had to go there every day to be trained. So you can pick things off the floor for me. Help me open doors, cabinets, turn on and off light switches. I tried to get her trained to get me a beer out of the fridge, but I stopped that. due to my recent illness, a lot of bed bound, they're going to retire early for me and I get a keeper. Because I got to report each year how much you raised each month, annual checkups from the vet. I mean, they have a pretty stringent guidelines you got to follow. And she wears a vest saying she's certified, and she's got a tag in there, and I got an ID card that says she's certified, and I got a patch on her vest. I am working, please do not pet me. I might as well not put that on there because people don't read. I think that's terrible. People come up and just start petting her. I'm like, excuse me, she's working.
One of the things that I do know about service dogs is you're not supposed to pet them because it messes with their programming.
Yes. If I just take her outside to go potty, whatever, once I put the vest on her, she knows it's time to go to work. And when you pet her, she thinks she's maybe getting off work and she wants to play until I put her back into work. And there's a certain word I will say that means she's off duty until the next time.
But you said they're going to retire her.
Yeah, they're going to retire her early since of my illness.
Does that mean she'll just go back to being a regular dog or like?
Yeah, she'll be my pet now. They get retired, I think, after 6 years anyway. It's a lot of activity they have to do. It's, you know, it could be hard on the dogs. She is an extension of me. I've had landlords try to charge me deposit for her. I carefully told them by law, you cannot. And I had to prove a bunch of paperwork that she was certified. You get tried to take advantage of. You just got to watch your P's and Q's.
Once she's retired and becomes pretty much a, you know, run-of-the-mill pet, man, that's great that they're going to let you keep her and all that. But are you going to get a second service dog?
No. The reason I'm retiring her early is because I can't take her out and give her exercise.
Mm.
And she's got to stay awake. She has to stay around 60 pounds. That sounds like not a lot. You're only supposed to give her a cup and a quarter each meal, morning and night. And people are like, that's not enough. You know, people are just used to picking them up, putting a bowl in there. And no, that's enough if they're getting exercise. And because you don't want them fat and try to jump up on the curb or have to jump something to get something from me. At the training, they showed a dog that they recalled because the dog got fat. They showed in slow motion the force on the back legs it takes.
It's almost being like a professional athlete because they got to stay a certain size too.
Exactly. Yeah. And you got to keep training them and keep using them. So, I mean, they'll never forget, but they will be a little lazy. I can't say certain words. I got to spell it out because she knows what them words mean. Like right now, she's in the living room, I'm in the bedroom. I can't believe she hasn't came in here to see who I'm talking to. She is so nosy. She'll come in here and say, is there someone here or who's he talking to? I may not see her all day until she comes in there and says hello to me and goes back in there until she's ready to eat. And oh my God, when she's ready to eat, she's ready to eat.
All right, Alan, one more question, because I know you're not feeling well still, so I'm going to let you go in a minute. But people with disabilities seem to be on one side or another when it comes to being called things like inspirational, which is where the show gets its name. And I think I know where you stand on that. But since you weren't always part of the disabled community, I want you to tell me a misconception you had about that before you were a part of it.
I can remember saying my mom, because my dad heard all the time, and we heard he would yell at us. And I can remember saying to my mom, I would never be like that. That would never happen to me. And my mom said, don't say that, Leslie. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. She was right. Well, it happened to me. I lived on the farm, a small community. I really wasn't around a lot of people with disabilities. People are like, well, don't you wish it never happened? Of course you wish it never happened. But I wouldn't change it for nothing because it's probably closer to God. The experiences I've had. People change the names of people with disabilities all the time, and they never tell me. You know, first it was crippled, then it was handicapped, then it was challenged. Now it's people with disabilities.
Yeah, I've done a whole show on euphemisms. You should check that one out.
Right. No one told us, right? We didn't learn. At least they can consult with us. Jeez Louise. Inspiration, that's a new one for me. I don't find myself inspirational at all. I hope I'm maybe motivational. You know, it's like I've had two lives, before my accident and one after. People ask me, do you wonder what would happen if you never had your injury? No, because that's the life I never had. So I don't ever think about it.
Going back to the word inspirational, because this has come up before, like when that word is used to describe us, a lot of us feel like it's just the wrong word. Like, what are we inspiring you to do that you couldn't do before?
Right. I have no problem with the word. I'm very flexible. I mean, people can call me anything, and they have, trust me.
Good or bad, right?
Yeah. Well, I'd be going down the road, and people would just yell out the window, you freaking paraplegic. I'm like, get it right, dude. I'm a quadriplegic. Then there's this old man sitting outside. He goes, did he just say what I thought he said? I said, yeah. I was like, don't worry about it, man. I get it all the time. Inspirational. I have no quirks with it. I guess we could be inspirational. Anybody could be inspirational. You don't have to have a disability or impairment or anything like that. Just find the right cause.
All right, Alan. Well, like I said, I'm going to let you go, but I want to thank you for finally being an inspiration for this episode. I want to thank everybody else for listening. Remember, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Discord, YouTube, and now on TikTok. Links will be in the description. Until next time, this is Nate Lurie saying you don't always have to do a lot to inspire others.